Okay, this week's Sedra, Parshas Yisro. We find Yisro coming to Moshe Rabbeinu and basically offering him some sound advice. We can call it maybe rebuke, criticism, etc. So I'd like to speak a little bit about this area called criticism, rebuke. In Hebrew we call it bikoret. The Mikhtav Eliyahu says in Chelek Gimel, he speaks about bikoret, criticism, and he says that it's very, very important to realize, maybe it seems obvious, but a person should realize that when he's giving rebuke, that the rebuke is for the best of the rebukee, if there's such a word, the person you're giving rebuke to. Okay? You have to realize that it's for him. You're trying to straighten him out. He's doing something wrong, and for his own good, right, you're telling him what you're telling him. Now, in order that this should have the proper effect, so Chazal tell us, Dvarim hayotzim mihalev nichnasim el alev, things that come from the heart go into the other person's heart. So therefore, if you want to have effect, you're doing it for him. So if you want it to have its effect, its potency, it's important that it comes from your heart. And if it doesn't, in other words, you're giving him rebuke because you have your own agenda in mind, right? You want to show off. You're telling him you want to show off how good you are, how much you know, or you know halacha more than him, etc. If it has any personal bias involved, he says that's not going to have the desired effect, because it's not coming from the heart. And he says a very stark, staunch lashon over there. He says, "Lo rach shatochachto lo to'il." Not only will the rebuke not have effect if you're doing it for your own purposes, ela shehi nidon aleha kemezalzel b'chavero umetzara l'shem hanas atzmo. This is called being belittling your friend, being mezalzel in your friend, and you are also causing the person sar for your own personal benefit. And that's all you're doing, right? If I want to show how great I am in halacha, whatever, and I tell him for that reason, you're just making the guy feel bad, and you're mitzar him, and you're, you know, belittling him for your own pleasure, so you can, you know, get pleasure from this. And he says, "V'ansho chamur me'od chas v'shalom." Such a person who gives rebuke, therefore, and doesn't do it properly, he's doing it, you know, for his own bias, he says, not going to have the desired effect. That wouldn't be so bad. That would be, that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is that it's called being mezalzel on your friend, causing tzar to your friend, and his punishment is very, very severe, chas v'shalom, concludes the Mikhtav Eliyahu. Now, it's very important, of course, that the person that is being rebuked feels that these are dvarim sheyotzi min alev, that it's really coming from your heart. There's a story brought down in one of Rabbi Krohn's Sefer Svarim. He tells a story. There was a rav in Miami, and he was giving a shiur in the shul, and the topic of the shiur was the life of the Chafetz Chaim. He was speaking about the Chafetz Chaim, his life and times. And at one point in the speech, he said, "You know, I have an interesting story that I heard about the Chafetz Chaim, but unfortunately, it's incomplete. I don't know all the details. But even what I know, I think is worth telling." Okay, that was the story. It says in Radin, where the Chafetz Chaim was at the yeshiva of Radin, and one Shabbos, one of the boys, one of the Bachram, Yeshiva, was caught smoking. He was smoking on Shabbos. So, of course, it created a big ruckus in the, you know, town. Boy, smoking on Shabbos. And, the Hanala of the Yeshiva got together and discussed the matter, and they decided there's no other choice but they have to remove the boy from the Yeshiva. So, word got out, and the Chafetz Chaim heard about it himself. And he says, "I understand you have to kick the boy out, but before you do so, please, I'd like to speak to him." Fine. So, the story goes that the boy went into the Chafetz Chaim, and he was in there for a very, very short time, a couple of minutes, and he left. And apparently, from that moment on, the boy was never, ever again Mechal Shabbos. He was in the Chavetz Chaim for a couple of minutes, that was it. So he says the story is incomplete because he said, I would love to find out, you know, what did the Chavetz Chaim say in those 2 minutes that could have, you know, machzir the boy the tshuva and never Mechal Shabbos. And what could he say? Okay, Meili would give him a whole big long, schmooze, you know, for 5 hours about Shabbos or whatever, I don't know. But in for 2 minutes, like, what could he possibly say? But Imam has changed the boy. So unfortunately, I don't have the whole story, but just the idea that, you know, someone could go in and be a minute or two in the Chavetz Chaim and come out and change person, that itself is worth, you know, mentioning. And then he went on. So he finished the speech, and people started leaving the shul. So as the rabbi was getting ready to leave, he noticed there was an old man sitting there and still in his seat and a little bit, like, bewildered. So the rabbi came up to him and he says, you know, what's wrong? He says, no, nothing. So he said, no, I see, you know, something's definitely disturbing you. You know, can I help you? Do you want to talk about it? And this. So he says, well, okay. He says, well, you remember that story you mentioned in your speech about the incomplete story about the Chafetz Chaim, about the boy that smoked on Shabbos? And he says, yeah, yeah. He says, well, I've news for you. He says, I was the boy. So the rabbi was like, you know, mouth open. He was shocked. He couldn't believe it. Like, what a coincidence. You know, he picked up the story, and here's the guy, the boy that was smoking on Shabbos right here in front of him. So he was too shocked to even ask him, you know, what did Chafetz Chaim say? But eventually he, you know, opened up and he, you know, wanted to hear the story from, you know, from the man himself. So he said, fine, I'll tell you exactly what happened. He says, I smoked on Shabbos and they told me I'm kicked out, but I have to go see the Chafetz Chaim first. So I said, okay, and I hadn't seen him before, met him before, and I was a little bit, you know, nervous. I had heard of things. I knew he was a big, big tzaddik and everything, but I never had the honor of meeting him, and, you know, not the greatest position to meet him now after what I had done, but okay. So I went to his house, and the first thing, I was shocked at what I'd seen. I walked into his house, and here's, like, you know, a guttural door, and his house was like, you know, I couldn't believe it. The dirt floors and the old furniture, and it looked like the poorest of the poor. I couldn't believe that this guttural door lives in such condition. That was the first thing that hit me. But okay, so I was sitting there waiting in the room, and then all of a sudden the door opens, and out walks the Chafetz Chaim. And walks up to me. First of all, he was in his 80s at the time, he was an older man already at that time. And a very short little man. He said, I was a young man at the time, wasn't an adult yet. And then he came up to my shoulders. Okay? And he walks up to me, and he doesn't say a word. He just, like, looked at me. And then he grabbed one of my hands in his two hands, and he held my hand really tight, and he had his eyes closed. Again, not saying a word. His eyes closed, and just kept holding my hand. And then I saw he opened up his eyes, and his eyes were full of tears. Full of tears. He then took my other hand also, he's holding both my hands in his, and he just said to me, Shabbos! The Heiliger Shabbos! That's all he said to me. And then the tears coming down his eyes, he says, I remember as if it was yesterday, the feeling I had, I felt so bad, what, that I caused the tzaddik tzar. Right? He was crying because it hurt him so much that I was Mechal Shabbos, and I felt terrible. How could I have done that thing and caused the tzaddik such tzar? Right? That he's crying so bitterly about what I had done, and I felt so bad. And he kept crying, and he didn't say anything else, just held my hand, and he was crying and crying. And one of the tears, he said, dripped off, you know, down from his face, and onto one of my hands. And when that tear dropped on my hand, I felt as if it drilled a hole right through my hand. And to this day, I feel the heat in my hand, you know, when I think about it, that the drop of tear that fell. And that was it. Then he let go of my hand, I left, and that was the end. And I, since then, as you said, correcting your story, I was never Mechal Shabbos again. So here is an example, you don't have to say too much, but he really felt these were dvarim yotzim min alev, and he thought that he cared. It wasn't anything personal. That's the ultimate in rebuke. As a side, though, it's important that as much as you do your best, there has to be a certain element on the part of the person receiving the rebuke that he also wants to change. You know, he has to have some desire to want to change in order for you to have an effect on it. There's a cute story of once this Rav came to visit. He stayed by the the early Rothschild, the father of the Rothschild family. He was a firm, very firm person. And this Rav was staying by him for a couple of days. So upon leaving, the Rothschild said to the Rav, "Listen, you're leaving, and I want you to do me a favor. Can you please tell me, give me some rebuke, tell me some criticism. I want to know, you've been here a couple of days, you saw how I run my household. Tell me things I can improve on, I'll be the Torah." So the Rav thought for a minute, and he says, truth of the matter is, he says, your entire household goes against the Torah. It's connected to Torah, your whole house. Everything about your house is against the Torah. So he was shocked. He was, against the Torah? What did I do? What did I do wrong? I can't believe it. I thought maybe something, but my whole house is your whole house. What? So he says, it says in the Torah, Veishman Yishurum Veivat. It says in the Torah that when you will become wealthy, then you will kivat, you'll kick, you'll start to deny God. When a person has a lot of money, so he tends to forget God. So it says in the Torah that when a person becomes wealthy, he forgets God. And you have a lot of money, and you didn't forget God. Your house is perfect. So you're going against the Torah. The Torah says you're supposed to forget God, and you didn't. So your whole house is against the Torah. Anyway, here's a guy that wanted to change. He asked the Rav. There's another cute story with Magi Miduvno. Once he gave a shmooze, and somebody came up to the Magi after the shmooze, and he says, "Rabbi, obviously what you spoke about, your words didn't come from your heart." So he says, "Why not? Why do you say that?" He says, "Well, because I'll say." Right? Things that if you speak from the heart, it goes into the heart. Well, it didn't go into my heart. So obviously it didn't come out of yours. So the Magi says, "Let me tell you a mashal." I said, "What's the mashal?" He says, "There was once a simple village person that he was visiting the city, and he was walking by a blacksmith, and he noticed how the blacksmith had a bellows. You know, bellows is these things like an accordion thing that you go back and forth, and it blows the air. So he had these coals, and he was using the bellows to, and so this simple village person was watching them. The flames fly up, as he uses his bellows. So he goes, "Wow." He said, "I've never seen something like that. What is that?" He says, "It's a bellows. It brings and makes the flame, a lot of flames." So that's wonderful. Do you know where I can get one of these? He goes, "Yeah, it's right next door. They sell them." He goes, "Wow." He goes out and he buys them. So then he comes home and he tries it and it doesn't work. So he comes back to the guy. He sold them. And next time he's in the city, he goes, "Excuse me, I want my money back." He says, "What's wrong?" He says, "You sold me this bellows and it didn't even work. It's obviously faulty." He says, "What do you mean? What can be wrong? What can go wrong? It looks okay to me. It isn't broken or anything." He goes, "Look, I'll show you." So he takes out of his pocket some coals, out of his pocket, regular coals, puts it down on the table, and starts blowing them with the bellows, and no flames. You know, what kind of a bellows is it? See, there's no flames. I said, your next door neighbor over here, the blacksmith, he goes like that, and the flames come flying out. He says, "You idiot, right? You can't, if you're going to use your bellows on cold coals, nothing's going to happen. You have to have hot coals. The coals are already hot, and then you blow them with the air, so then it brings up the flames. But if you don't have the hot coals to begin with, you can blow to them more. All you're going to do is make the coals even colder by blowing with the bellows that way." So too, said the Magi to this man, however, you need the condition that then there's a heart on the other side. Right? If you have a cold heart of stone, right, you can talk till tomorrow and I can come out of my heart as much as I want, but it's like the bellows blowing on a cold, nothing's going to happen. You got to have a spark there to ignite. Right? So too, Therefore, we see that with all your great intentions and proper rebuke, it's still, there is definitely the element that from the other side. And the person receiving the rebuke has to want to change as well, to a certain degree. Okay. I once read this interesting sefer from Rav Simcha Cohen, Shlita, and he's a specialist in Shalom Bayis issues and Chinuch. And there's a very interesting book called Bayit HaYehudi, The Jewish Home. And he, one section there, he discusses this idea of criticism, bikoret, and the proper way of doing so, how to do it, when to do it, when not to do it, again, to, in order to have its desired effect, which, as we mentioned, is obviously to try to help the other person. So he gave a few pointers of how to go about it in order that it should have this desired effect. And I'd like to share these a few points with you. And what's interesting is, I'd like to connect it to the Parsha. You'll see that Yisro followed these techniques in his rebuke on Moshe Rabbein. Okay, so first thing he says is, or one of the things he says, is that a person should not rebuke immediately upon entering the house. In other words, the husband comes home, he shouldn't open the door, and the first thing is, hey, what kind of a mess is there in here? Don't you know how to clean up? Don't start with the rebuke as soon as you walk in the house. This is why? Because the people in the house, the wife or whatever, they're looking forward to you coming home and, seeing you, etc. And therefore, the first thing that comes out of your mouth is rebuke. That's, after they're excited to see you, and then you're getting, on their case, the first thing. So again, it's not gonna. You're trying to rebuke in order for them to change. They're not gonna change. It's the wrong time to rebuke. So too, we see by Yisro. It says Yisro came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then it says Vayehi Mimacharas. It was only the next day, Mimacharas. The next day, Vayesha that Moshe Rabbeinu was judging the people, and then Yisro came up to him and he says. It's saw Moshe Rabbeinu from morning till night, sitting and judging the people all by himself. And then Yisro gave his rebuke that says, Moshe, you shouldn't do this because it's not going to work. And then he told him his advice of having other people to share in the responsibility of judging the people. But we notice that he didn't do it as soon as he came the first day. It was only the Limacharas, the next day. Second thing he says is that. You shouldn't rebuke during a meal. When you're sitting down with your family, whatever it is, it's not a good time to rebuke while you're eating at a meal time. He says, why? First of all, he says, meal time is, psychologically, people use meal time as a time to release their pressures they have. Eating is a form of relaxation. And again, so if you're going to start creating this tense, air, by why'd you do this, why'd you that? It's not going to work because you're upsetting the person. He wants to have a night to release his pressures, and here you are, creating an environment to negate to that. Also, when a person eats, he wants to enjoy what he's eating, wants to taste the foods that he's eating. If you get involved in being attacked, so he won't be able to enjoy the food, and that's also going to bother him. So I think if you're rebuking a person in a time when what you're saying is bothering him, is going to bother him, again, he won't take it to heart. He says, interesting also, that if a person is upset at mealtime, it affects his digestion also. And he can't digest the food properly. Anyways, so we find Yisro doing it the proper way. Why? It says, "Vikach Yisro chotem Moshe, etc. Olaz vachim, v'yavo Aaron v'chol ziknei Yisrael l'chol lechem im chotem Moshe lifnei Elohim." That they're l'chol lechem. They sat down to a meal, right? Yisro and Moshe and Aaron, and only v'vehim imacharat v'yeshem Moshe. But only again, imacharat. It was only the next day that Yisro rebuked him. He didn't rebuke him at the time of the meal. Another thing he says. Is that you? This is important. When you rebuke somebody, you should never attack the person himself. You should always just attack his actions, right? If the person slams the door, right? You don't say, "You idiot!" Only idiots slam doors like that way. Don't call the person names. Don't label him. but rather to say, you know, what you did was not right. You shouldn't slam the door. Okay? You know, meant attack the action that he did and not the person. Don't label him. Right? I'll never forget once that there was a person from a guy from Chutzlaret, and he was here in Israel. He was doing this business deal with this Israeli, and with this chutznik was the friend of his Israeli, you know, help him out a little bit. And the chutznik felt that this Israeli he was doing the business with cheated him. So he turned to him and he says, I happen to watch this. He says, turns to the guy and he says, Shakran, you know, you're a liar. You know, you're a liar. So the Israeli friend turned to him. He says, don't say that. He says, you don't say talk like that. You don't call a guy Shakran a liar. You should say to him, Ata lo dover emet. Said, you're not speaking the truth. And that's how you talk. So now that's the idea. You can call a guy, you're a liar. I mean, you label the guy. This guy is a liar. Or you say, no, you're not speaking the truth. Meaning that what you're saying is a lie. But you're not a liar, I'm not attacking you. If the person gets attacked personally, so he gets defensive, right? But so you're not attacking him. You're a great guy, but what you just did was not right. So you attack the action, not the person. And we find this also by with Yisro. And what does he say? He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, but Yarchot Moshe, he saw what was going on with Moshe judging the people. So what did he say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Maha dabar azeh asher ata oseh la'am. So what did he say? What is this thing that you are doing? Again, he didn't say, Moshe, you whatever, right? You know, he didn't attack Moshe. He attacked his action. Maha dabar azeh asher ata oseh. What you are doing. What's this thing that you're doing? He attacked his action. He didn't attack Moshe Rabbeinu. Another point is, he says that a person, when rebuking, should use nice words as well. Okay, you should speak nicely. It also has effect if you say these like real gruff words and speak meanly. Again, the person's not going to like it, and it's not going to change. So too, by what does Yisro say? Vayomer chosen Moshe love lo tov hadavar asher ata oseh. Again, attacking the action asher ata oseh. But he didn't say it's ra, you know, it's evil, it's bad what you're doing. He didn't use that. He used a nice lashon, lo tov hadavar. It's not good. Could have said it's bad. Instead of saying it's bad, lo tov, like we said in the story before, like you're not speaking the truth. Instead of saying you're a liar, you know. Also, it is a nice way to speak. It's not nice. You should speak in a nice lashon. Another thing he says is that it's very important also to explain what the rebuke. And not just give it. For example, say the example we gave before, somebody slams the door. So instead of just saying, you know, don't slam the door, why'd you slam the door? You should explain it. Tell them, you shouldn't slam the door because slamming doors aren't, whatever, they're not good for the door, or wakes up people, or annoys people. Or explain why you're telling him what you're telling him. Don't just tell him, don't do this. Because then he'll think, well, why not? I mean, so what's wrong with it? And then, again, you're not going to necessarily change. If you explain to him, maybe you understand, oh, I didn't realize that. And then you have more hope of changing the person. So too, we find over here by Yisro that he explained. He says, he told the Moshe Rabbeinu, lo tov hadavar asher ata oseh, not good what you're doing. And he explained why. Right, why is it no good? Okay, well, what's wrong? So he says, Navol Tibol, because you're gonna like wither out, it's too much for you, right? All alone judging the people day and night, it's too much, you're gonna like wither away. Gamata, Gama Amaza, you and the nations. Explained it. He didn't just tell them don't do it. Explain them why. What's the ramifications? Again, that's much stronger. And one last point says that also ties in what we said before, that the person that is receiving the rebuke, he should feel that it is coming from the heart. In other words, that you really love him, you really care about him, and that you're telling your rebuke because you want the best for him. And we find also by Yisro in the second in this pasuk as well. What we said, he says, "Navotivo gamata gamamazeh asher imach hikaved mimcha davar lo tuchal asol levadecha." So you can see his whole approach was, he felt bad for Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, "Look, you're going to wither away. It's too hard for you, and it's very difficult for you." So he saw that Yitro cared about him, which he did. Right? He pointed out that I feel bad for you. It's not good for you, and that's very important. That the person that is being rebuked gets this message. So that's we've learned a number of these points. This has other points, of course, in rebuke. There's a few things that we see actually Yisro put into action. And we have to remember this, that we have a mitzvah tochacha. It's important. It says, chayach tochayach asamisecha. You see somebody do something wrong, and you have to rebuke him. But we have to remember that the rebuke's not for us. It's not to show off and show up or whatever. It's to help the person. You know, we want him to not do this again for his own good, for your own good. But in order to that to be accomplished, it has to be done properly. We said it has to be dvarim shayotim, mihalev, has to come from your heart. He has to feel that way, and if he does so, then there's a much greater chance that the person being rebuked will accept it and change. It's a shame if we all take rebuke from others and do our utmost in changing ourselves as well. Hashem Baruch Hu should see our efforts and crown them with the ultimate reward of the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mehera b'yameinu.